The reading is taken from Hosea, chapter 1, through to verse 1, chapter 2.
The word of the Lord that came to Hosea, son of Beeri, in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel. When the Lord first spoke through Hosea, the Lord said to Hosea, "Go, take to yourself a wife of whoredom, and have children of whoredom, for the land commits great whoredom by forsaking the Lord." So he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son. And the Lord said to him, "Call his name Jezreel, for in just a little while I will punish the house of Jehu for the blood of Jezreel, and I will put an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. And on that day I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel." She conceived again and bore a daughter. And the Lord said to him, "Call her name No Mercy, for I will no more have mercy on the house of Israel to forgive them at all, but I will have mercy on the house of Judah, and I will save them by the Lord their God. I will not save them by bow or by sword or by war or by horses or by horsemen." When she had weaned No Mercy, she conceived and bore a son. And the Lord said, "Call his name not My People, for you are not My people, and I am not your God. Yet the number of the children of Israel shall be like the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured or numbered. And in the place where it was said to them, 'You are not My people,' it shall be said to them, 'Children of the living God.' And the children of Judah and the children of Israel shall be gathered together, and they shall appoint for themselves one head, and they shall go up from the land, for great shall be the day of Jezreel. Say to your brothers, 'You are My people,' and to your sisters, 'You have received mercy.'"
Thanks, Charlene, for reading. And do keep that page open in front of you. Roses are red, violets are blue. I read Hosea and thought of you. That was my Valentine's Day poem to Fran this year. Slightly unfair, do you think, after the reading about the wife of whoredom? If it makes you feel any better, this was Fran's poem to me. The roses are wilted, the violets too. Is it worth the pain of loving you? I know. Before you get too concerned about the state of our marriage, don't worry. We wrote those poems together. That's how we celebrated Valentine's Day this year. And they're not really our words. We were just attempting to paraphrase the original, part of which we just had read to us. We're starting, as Rob said, a new series in the book of Hosea. It'll take us all the way up to Easter. And it's a book about a marriage, but not primarily a human marriage. Hosea will teach us about the marriage between God and his people. And I guess there's nothing particularly unusual about that. So in some ways, the whole Bible is the story of God's relationship with his people. But I wonder how you feel about that relationship sitting here today. I imagine in a group this kind of size, there'd be a fair amount of variation. So maybe you're here and you don't think that you have a relationship with God, but you're kind of open to getting to know him, to seeing if he's worth your time. Relationships take up time, so we'd want to be sure that we were compatible before we got into anything serious. Some of us might have begun that relationship already, but are unsure how long-term it will be. Is he really the one that you want to build a future with? Or maybe he's asking you to get too serious too soon, and you need some space. Maybe you're tired of having a long-distance relationship with him. Maybe you're not sure he's really your type. Maybe he doesn't give you enough credit or value you enough. Doesn't take enough interest in the things you're interested in. Maybe you don't feel like he ever does anything romantic anymore. And I think we would say to each other, Well, the love of God has been demonstrated on the cross. But do you ever feel like the cross is not really the way you wanted God to love you? Shouldn't he know your love language by now? And either way, it's been a really long time since he did anything like that. Well, if you've ever felt any of those things before, Hosea might be a good book to read. And it's worth saying right up front, we often come to the Bible ready to say how we feel about God. The book of Hosea gives God some airtime to say how he feels about us. And he thought that the best way to communicate that would be to tell a prophet called Hosea to go and get married. So Hosea's special calling is to be the live-in illustration. When you walk down the street and see Mr. and Mrs. Hosea, you'll get a glimpse of the relationship between God and his special chosen people, Israel. Doesn't sound too bad, does it? Hosea gets to marry the girl of his dreams. As you see him enjoying his happily ever after, that's how much God enjoys spending every day with Israel. Or so Hosea's friends might have thought, until Hosea tells them who the bride-to-be is. Verse 2, God's instructions are very clear. When the Lord first spoke through Hosea, the Lord said to Hosea, "Go, take to yourself a wife of whoredom and have children of whoredom, for the land commits great whoredom by forsaking the Lord." So he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son. Point one is a marriage to a whore. "I'm engaged." "Oh, congratulations. Who's the girl?" "Oh, well, do you know Gomer?" "Gomer? Everyone knows Gomer. Some people know Gomer very well." Three times God says it in one sentence. Whoredom, whoredom, whoredom. I think that's more times than I've ever said the word whoredom in my life. And it's not completely clear at this point whether Gomer is already a prostitute, although she definitely is by chapter 2, verse 5. But she's still the best fit when you're looking to marry a wife of whoredom. So safe to assume she probably does have a personal record of some sort to commend her for the role. I don't know, what does that make her? The most promiscuous woman in their community? And we're supposed to think that's a really bad choice. This is going to be an unhappy marriage. And she's not going to surprise us as if she's actually a lovely, misunderstood person, and she just needed somebody to love her. No, God sets Hosea's expectations right from the start. Take to yourself a wife of whoredom and have children of whoredom. It's possible that that means Hosea now needs to adopt all the children that Gomer's already had from other sexual encounters, the kind of package deal, you have to take all of them in as well. Or just that from this day onwards, Hosea will never know for sure which children are biologically his and which are not. So there might be times, I suppose, when he has a pretty good idea, I suppose. The child is born with that distinctive hair colour that the postman has. Or I guess if he works out the dates carefully and realises he was away that month, but he did hear that rumour about the sheep herders who were passing through. Or the jokes down the pub about there being another little mouth to feed, when he knows it can't possibly be his. Take to yourself a wife of whoredom and have children of whoredom. Hosea didn't get a Valentine's Day card, but he did see the pregnancy test in the bin. So I guess he'll be getting something for Valentine's Day. Our culture is steadily turning away from God's design for sex and marriage. We're rethinking terms like infidelity, and even that word kind of sounds old-fashioned now. I read a Psychology Today article which said there are both healthy and unhealthy reasons for having extramarital relations. But I hope, sitting here today, you feel like that's wrong, that you are moved to empathize with Hosea. Back in December, amongst all the other standard Christmas films, Fran and I watched Love Actually, and you can probably guess the bit of the film that I'm thinking of. I think we should have a picture. This is the most moving scene in a film that's supposedly about finding love all around. It's the moment where Emma Thompson's character discovers that her husband is cheating on her. And she stands alone in the bedroom crying, feeling like her life as a wife and a mother is utterly foolish. How does God feel about his people? It's like being married to a whore. And it's his life as a husband and a father that we make a fool of. Hosea's experience of being sinned against is so personal and relational and emotionally raw, which you might know that the Bible says about sin. But do we actually think of sin that way? Do you believe that about your own sin? I take it the need for such a vivid and dramatic illustration through Hosea's painful, dysfunctional marriage might show how far God has to go to persuade us this is what sin is. He could have just told Hosea to preach, like given him a message for the people, but that won't get through to us because we need to get what this feels like. We need someone to act it out in front of us in real life. If you've ever felt sympathy for Emma Thompson's character, imagine it happening to her again. And again, and again. And depending on who you are, you might not have to imagine very hard. You will know firsthand what it's like to be hurt like this. And obviously, this is just the start of the book. We haven't got past verse 3 yet. So we haven't really heard the case. But God says, this is what it's like for him. And if you're willing to listen over the next few weeks, he'll explain why. But if it is true, would you blame God for wanting to end the relationship? A marriage to a whore can't really have a future, can it? And I think that's clear through the names that God gives Hosea's children. This is a doomed marriage and a family with no future. That's our second point. You might have seen on Facebook the happy news about our mission partners Alkesh and Katie. So they recently had their baby. There they are. This is little Theodore Woods. His name means God given. That's nice, isn't it? They sent round a WhatsApp and announced it all on Facebook so that we could all see this little gift from God. Well, remember Hosea's family life is the advert for God's family life. And not a single person likes Hosea's posts when he reveals the names of his children on Facebook. All three of them are counting down the clock to the day mum and dad finally get a divorce. So read with me from verse 3 again. So he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son. And the Lord said to him, call his name Jezreel, for in just a little while I will punish the house of Jehu for the blood of Jezreel, and I will put an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel, and on that day I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. She conceived again and bore a daughter, and the Lord said to him, call her name No Mercy, for I will no more have mercy on the house of Israel to forgive them at all, but I will have mercy on the house of Judah, and I will save them by the Lord their God. I will not save them by the bow, or by the sword, or by war, or by horses, or by horsemen. When she had weaned No Mercy, she conceived and bore a son. And the Lord said, call his name Not My People, for you are not my people, and I am not your God. So kid number one, Jezreel. He's incidentally the only child we're told is definitely Hosea's. But his name doesn't sound too bad, I guess, does it? It even means something quite nice, technically. But unfortunately, in the Bible, it has long been synonymous with bloodshed. So verse 1 tells us that when Hosea starts preaching, Jeroboam is the king of Israel. And the valley of Jezreel is where Jeroboam's great-great-grandfather Jehu, mentioned in verse 4, executed the entire previous royal family. It's a very bloody read. You can read it. It's in the Bible. And God used it to get rid of one bad king, but it turns out Jehu was just as bad. We spilt all that blood, but no lasting improvement. And I was trying to think, is there an equivalent that we might understand today? There isn't really. There isn't an equivalent for it. But there are some horrendous massacres that you could use, okay, to at least kind of capture the idea of mass murder. So, I don't know, what would that be? To call them little baby Auschwitz? Or little baby 9/11? That sounds awful, doesn't it? But it's not just a reminder of bloodshed. It's also a promise of bloodshed. I will punish the house of Jehu for the blood of Jezreel, and I will put an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. On that day I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. Hosea's first little boy is there to remind everyone that God is going to end the kingdom of Israel. A bit like Jeroboam's ancestor ended the previous royal family. And it doesn't happen instantly. But after Jeroboam dies, his son only lasts 6 months before he gets murdered. And 30 years of coups and royal assassinations later, Israel are completely wiped out. Did little Jezreel grow up to see his name become a reality? He probably did, actually. Although he might not have survived it. He lived to remind everyone this relationship had no future. Kid number two, verse 6, this time it's a baby girl. Is Hosea the father? Maybe not. It's kind of left ambiguous, I suppose. But what shall we call her? Something pretty? Call her name No Mercy, the unloved child. For I will no more have mercy on the house of Israel to forgive them at all. Verse 7, by contrast with Judah, shows what it means for Israel not to have God's mercy anymore. It means there's no one to save them when their enemies come knocking on their borders. And if they do ask for help on that day, well, Hosea's daughter will be stood there to remind them this relationship had no future. Verse 8, when she had weaned No Mercy, she conceived and bore a son. And the Lord said, call his name Not My People, for you are not my people, and I am not your God. Kid number 3 is probably most likely not actually to be Hosea's. So my wife just gave birth to Not My Son, or at the school gates, I'm here to pick up Not My Son. And it's the opposite of God's covenant promise all the way through the Old Testament. They will be my people, and I will be their God. Well, not anymore. You are not my people. I am not your God. When the Assyrian army launches its full-scale invasion on Israel, and they say, God of Israel, save your people. Well, not my people will be there with them. Probably all grown up by then. I told you, this relationship had no future. And they sound, I mean, they're horrible names, aren't they? Awful. But when Hosea tweets the baby names to his friends or takes the baby round to meet the neighbours, they probably just thought he sounded crazy. Hosea, the lunatic with his marital problems. We don't need to worry about him. And maybe that's because life in Israel, when Hosea starts his ministry, is pretty good. The word of the Lord came to Hosea during a time of prosperity for the northern kingdom. It's been a couple of hundred years since Solomon was king and the kingdom split into two pieces, but Israel are doing pretty well at the moment. So verse 1 told us Jeroboam, son of Joash, is king at the start of Hosea's ministry. And you could go and read in 2 Kings about Joash, his father, who's just had a crushing victory over the kingdom of Judah in the south. Or about Jeroboam himself, who expanded the borders of Israel as he pushed back the kingdom of Syria in the north. So sure, they don't go to the temple at Jerusalem anymore. And God's probably not a fan of the fact that they also worship golden calves and Baal. But he must be sort of okay with it, because they keep winning victories. The kingdom's still growing. Can you see why they might think that their relationship with God was kind of working? And it'll be an important point as we read through Hosea. What does it mean to play the whore? Because they hadn't completely abandoned God. They just had an open relationship with him. They still worshipped God when they needed him. But they kept the relationship open to others as well. Most of us probably don't have little golden statues at home that we pray to for success or protection. But you might have a lucky charm or a lucky t-shirt. Or you might touch wood to avoid bad luck. Or you might avoid saying something for fear that you will jinx it. Being superstitious means fundamentally you think someone or something other than God needs appeasing or sidestepping or manipulating somehow. And that's before we even get onto the gods of career and relationship and status and image and money. Thanks, Callum, for that honest interview. We'll think about that a bit more later. But have you ever done anything to please one of those gods rather than the God? The New Testament suggests in a few places that playing the whore might well be something the church could slip back into. So James 4 verse 4, for example, "You adulterous people." And we'll have lots more time to think about this as we read on through Hosea. But what do you worship? What is your life primarily geared towards? Who or what do we cheat on God with? And even as you sit here at church this evening, is there another God waiting for you at home? And I think we, just like them, might think, well, God seems to be okay with it, actually, because life's going all right at the moment. Or even more, that he should be okay with it and just be thankful that we've come to church this evening. But that's not really how relationships work, is it? It's not okay to be faithful on Sunday but sleep around for the rest of the week. It's not okay to love your husband or wife when you're at home but at work pretend like you're single. It's not okay to excuse your behaviour because, well, at least you haven't been cheating on God as much as the person sat next to you. Hosea is really clear. A relationship like this has no future. And yet, that's not the end of the chapter, is it? So that's why I've put on point two, that kind of ... question mark in brackets. Because quite inexplicably, Hosea chapter 1 ends by saying the exact opposite. Have a look again at verse 10 with me. "Yet the number of the children of Israel shall be like the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured or numbered. And in the place where it was said to them, 'You are not my people,' it shall be said to them, 'Children of the living God.' And the children of Judah and the children of Israel shall be gathered together, and they shall appoint for themselves one head, and they shall go up from the land, for great shall be the day of Jezreel. Say to your brothers, you are my people. And to your sisters, you have received mercy. Do those verses feel a bit out of place or a bit out of the blue? As if they've been kind of added in the wrong place? There's no explanation for why. It's the total reversal of everything we just read. But there's no indication that Hosea's wife has changed. Surely this is a bad idea. How can God possibly think their relationship will ever look like this? I listened to a sermon in Hosea as I was reading it, and the preacher painted a picture of the marriage counselor's office. So as Hosea and Gomer come to speak to him, they've been living apart for a while, but they've decided to move back into it together and renew their marriage vows and rename the children while they're at it. The counselor has been helping them for quite a long time now, but to be honest, he's always been pretty confident that this was a doomed relationship. Not least because as Hosea invites him to the ceremony, Gomer gives him a wink over his shoulder. And on the way out, Gomer does take Hosea's hand, but with the other hand, she slips a piece of paper with her phone number into the marriage counselor's pocket. Are you sure, Hosea, that you want to renew your promises to this woman? Are you sure, God, that she will ever be marriage material? The way the book switches between the pain and misery of Hosea's relationship, and at the same time, this desire to keep it going, gives us a very honest, emotional window into what it's like to be in love with a whore. I wonder, would you counsel God against that? Would you counsel God against marrying you? If you understand the book of Hosea, I think you might. Don't marry the whore god if you want this kind of future. She can't be the one. People don't really change. And even if you could change her, think about your history. Think what you'd have to forget to live happily ever after with her. And when that does sound impossible, then I think you've understood the gospel. So the New Testament quotes these verses and says, this is what Jesus achieves at the cross. You might recognize them from our theme verse. Once you were not a people, but now you are God's people. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. The gospel is God marrying the whore. And it was always God's plan to do that. So verse 10 is lifted directly from God's promise to Abraham before this relationship even began. He knew from the very start what you were like. And you'll never love the gospel until you realize the gospel should not have happened to you. But somehow, even though your sins are very many, his mercy is more.